This episode is made possible by Henson Shaving. It's almost that time again. Election season is bearing down on us, and we have some truly strong contenders this cycle. In the red corner, we've got Florida Man, the Penguin, this guy, literally the only black Republican in the Senate, and of course, the God Emperor himself, the man who's so confident that he won't even show up for debates, Donald Trump. And in the blue corner, we've got Oprah's spiritual advisor, Hassan's uncle, the chairman of a gelato company, and the reigning champion, the man who may or may not remember how he got there, Joe Biden. Yes, it's really shaping up to be a once-in-a-lifetime election season, and as always, a life-and-death struggle for democracy and the very soul of the nation, as they all seem to be these days, despite very few differences in Republican and Democratic governance. But there is one thing that actually does make this election cycle a bit different. Conservatives have been lurching towards fascism for years, with the Democrats not far behind, though historically they've been a little more subtle about it. But recently, the American right has dropped a hot new single, Project 2025. If you thought they were bad before, just wait till you get a load of this. In today's episode, we're taking a look at the new conservative plan to seize total control, and what it means for the future of the country. Brace yourself. Okay, Project 2025. What is it? Spearheaded by the Heritage Foundation, Project 2025 is a massive 920-page conservative manifesto detailing how they intend to give the president vastly more power, destroy bureaucracy, root out woke propaganda, appoint vetted far-right freedom fighters at every level of government, and have it all ready to implement the day the next conservative president is elected, which they assume will be 2025, hence the name. Despite Trump obviously being the favorite, the plan is not dependent on any particular candidate winning, but can be implemented with any figurehead at the reins, who will become essentially completely unaccountable. God Emperor was supposed to be a joke, but here we are. You may have seen this book floating around online, The Mandate for Leadership. This is what most people assume Project 2025 to be, but this is actually just one part of a much larger conservative master plan. Project 2025 has four core pillars. First, the policy, as outlined in the 920-page document. This is where all the heinous and frankly disturbing policy proposals live, and don't worry, we'll look at some of those in a bit. Two, the personnel database, which has been described as the conservative LinkedIn, as if LinkedIn wasn't cringe enough already. This will be a repository for conservative resumes from people across all sectors and from all walks of life, to be selected as needed to staff positions in every level of government, at both the federal and state level. 3. Training. They've got a new online institute, basically PragerU, but for people who like to wear poorly tailored suits and fantasize about rolling back environmental regulations. This training program will create willing and able soldiers to serve on the front lines in the war on the woke cabal of the deep state. And finally, 4. The 180-day playbook, a step-by-step guide for the new conservative emperor to systematically implement the policies listed in the manifesto. Think IKEA assembly instructions, but for fascism. These four pillars are the key components of the project, and taken together, they offer a pretty comprehensive vision for the dystopian future the right hopes to usher in. It's all pretty alarming. But where exactly does this come from? Let's take a look at some of the names behind the project. If you flip through the first pages of the PDF, because, let's be honest, we're not about to give the Heritage Foundation $35, you'll find a list of far-right think tanks, advisory groups, and business and government figures who contributed to the project. Some of the names include Donald Devine, once called by the Washington Post Reagan's terrible swift sword of the civil service, for his eagerness to slash spending and fire people. Stephen Moore, the well-known conservative author and right-wing economist, with such credentials as working for the very legitimate FreedomWorks and serving as a Fox News contributor. And Peter Navarro, who is notable for being one of just three people who worked with Trump for the duration of his term without being fired. He's also a little bit obsessed with China, having written three truly awful books on the subject: The Coming China Wars, Death by China, and Crouching Tiger. The manifesto credits 35 total authors, as well as dozens of contributors, all with their credentials listed. It's about what you'd expect. A lot of people from the Heritage Foundation, some military goons, a smattering of former Trump officials, extremist economists, and a considerable number of people who have worked in climate, energy, immigration, and legal positions under conservative governments. What you won't see a lot of in the acknowledgments is religious credentials, which you'd think would be important given how much the document leans on Christian language. This should be your first indication that maybe the people who loudly proclaim their faith aren't really all that Christian, and they're just using it to win brownie points among their religious conservative audience. There's actually a lot of overlap here with the topic of our last video on Christian nationalism. These people use religious rhetoric, but a little bit of digging reveals that the God they pray to is not the God of the Bible, but a mythologized vision of America itself. Much like fascists throughout history have relied on a glorious false past to act as a North Star to guide them into the Promised Land, so too have American fascists wrapped themselves in comforting mythology, proving that what they are doing is not only just, but divinely inspired. When you have a higher power on your side, it's pretty easy to justify horrific acts. Okay, with the brains behind the project out of the way, let's get into the nitty-gritty. What exactly do these people want? What's their end goal? Well, there are four main priorities. In their words, they want to, 1, restore the family as the centerpiece of American life and protect our children. 2, dismantle the administrative state and return self-governance to the American people. 3, defend our nation's sovereignty, borders, and bounty against global threats. And 4, secure our God-given individual rights to live freely, what our Constitution calls the blessings of liberty. Okay, you can probably already see where some of this is going, but let's start with the boring stuff. The nuts and bolts of manipulating the federal government to serve the right. A lot of this project centers around gutting what's called the administrative state. This is stuff like the EPA, FEMA, HUD, the Fed, stuff like that. The humdrum logistical stuff that nonetheless often plays an important role. Or sometimes not. Looking at you, DHS. There's a lot of this stuff, so much so that it's often called the fourth branch of government, and it deals with the day-to-day operations of the country, everything from transportation to environmental regulations, food and water safety, and so on. Most of these agencies are created when a law is passed that makes people think, there really should be a group of people responsible for making sure food is safe for consumption, or whatever. The government slaps together an elite team of nerds, that is to say, subject matter experts, people who actually know what they're talking about, and there you go, you've got the FDA. The FDA then takes over the task of enforcing whatever regulations they come up with in administrative courts. But this is all really boring. All you need to know is that a lot fewer people die because the FDA exists, and we have fewer polluted rivers and extinct species because the EPA exists. Conservatives don't really like rules in general, especially rules that protect the environment or poor people, so these agencies need to go. It's not good enough that the president can appoint the heads of these admin agencies, for example, Trump appointing a fossil fuel executive to head the EPA. No, conservatives want complete power over everyone in these agencies. Because right now, the subject matter experts at, say, the EPA are not beholden to politics. They just come to work and try to figure out how to protect snails. Or something. Much of the argument here centers around whether these agencies are constitutional. Conservatives like to claim that since the Constitution didn't explicitly say federal agencies like these were part of their master plan, they're government overreach and should be dismantled. Historically, federal courts have disagreed with this assessment, so until now, we can rest assured that our milk has been pasteurized and our water isn't contaminated with lead. But here's the thing with the whole constitutionality argument. Who cares? Most countries around the world scrap their constitutions entirely when the people decide they're no longer relevant or they need to be overhauled. Only the United States has this weird reverence for the Constitution and the Founding Fathers. Part of that is due to the relatively short history of the country. The US has only really existed for a couple hundred years. When you look around the world and see some of your peer nations have a couple thousand years of history, you might feel the need to mythologize your past just a little bit to make your nation seem special. The Founding Fathers have been elevated to godlike status, especially among conservatives. But the truth is, they were a bunch of frat boys. Okay, not all of them. Ben Franklin was 70 and Washington was 44. But a lot of them, dear viewer, are younger than you are right now. Alexander Hamilton, the one with the annoying fan club, he was 21, and he wasn't even the youngest. Anyway, the point is, when you look at historical events without the rose tint of mythology, you see a bunch of normal people just kind of making it up as they go along. It's normal that things change over the centuries. What's considered constitutional should reflect the values and norms of the time. That little tangent aside, let's get back to the goals of Project 2025. We talked about the boring stuff, wanting to gut the administrative state, but what else is in there? It's 920 pages after all, they've got to have some other ideas. Well, a lot of it is what you might expect. As Trump stated on numerous occasions, they want to kick the cultural Marxists out of the Department of Education, demolish the deep state, and combat woke ideology at all levels of government. They plan to do this by making extensive use of Schedule F, a piece of legislation established at the federal level by Trump, which allows the president to fire federal government officials at will, presumably for not sufficiently bending the knee. The project calls for an executive branch with essentially unchecked power, making the president basically unaccountable to Congress. They want to dismantle the liberal system to build one more favorable to conservatives. That means scrapping environmental protections, moving away from globalism, punishing corporations for DEI language, which is funny because it sounds like they actually think these corporations genuinely believe their DEI statements. They want to escalate tensions with China by ending economic engagement entirely, crack down on immigration, criminalize LGBT expression. They claim that any talk of gender, gender identity, and so on is pornography and should be banned, and has no First Amendment protections. They want to scrap labor discrimination policies, quote, maintain a biblically based, social science reinforced definition of family, meaning scrap protections for same-sex marriage, and plan to, quote, secure our God-given individual rights to live freely, unless, of course, you're one of the aforementioned groups they intend to criminalize out of existence. In that vein, to touch very briefly on their views on pornography, if you read the text, they basically just mean any discussion of gender, abortion, or any identity other than straight and cisgender. They want all instances of this kind of language stripped from society. While it's a little cliche to compare the conservatives to Nazis, you know what books were the first to be burned? Which institutions were the first to be shuttered? Books on gender and sexuality, and institutions that studied these topics. But okay, we know elected conservatives are like one step removed from outright fascism at this point. But how are they justifying this? Yes, we all know they just forced this stuff through if they could. But at least for now, they still have to play by the rules of Western liberalism. So the key to their plan is to lean on unitary executive theory, which dates back to the devil himself, Ronald Reagan. In a nutshell, this political theory suggests that maybe having three separate but equal branches of government isn't a good idea, and that instead, the executive branch should dominate the relationship. Reagan's team came up with this notion to help facilitate deregulation, and it kind of just stuck. Every president since Reagan has made use of this theory to wield just a little bit more power than they probably should have. Bush Jr. justifying his invasion of Iraq, Obama justifying widespread US deployment overseas, Trump's Muslim ban, and so on. Now, the Project 2025 ghouls want to make sure the president has essentially unchecked power, that Congress cannot prevent the president from doing what they want to do, however heinous their pet projects may be. There's a whole conversation about unitary executive theory in government circles. People are writing books about it and having very important conversations with very smart people. And you know what? That's what makes this so scary. The Republicans talk a big game about destroying cultural Marxism or waging war on woke, but that's just bluster. When they start coming up with justifications within the liberal framework, the Democrats will cave like they always do. Every single time we see them play ball with the far right, they cede a little more ground each time. Then you get a president like Biden, who just straight up accelerates the process by speeding up border wall construction, approving a record number of oil drilling permits, and then when he inevitably loses because everyone is upset with him, the Project 2025 people swoop in and the Democrats just go along with it because it's technically legal. Not to do it again, but most fascists throughout history have come into power through technically legal means. And then they change what's legal so you can't get them out again. Well, that's all pretty grim, huh? What's the solution here? Do we just vote harder? No. I mean, do that if you want, especially if you think you can make a difference at the local level. But things have gotten worse for us with every single president. And things have certainly gotten worse for people living in the third world as the US gets more and more vicious abroad as our empire declines. The solution is the same as it's always been. Mass movements. Join an organization. Unionize your workplace. Learn to defend yourself and your community from fascist vigilante violence. Keep yourself safe online. Learn your rights. Educate yourself and those around you. Things like Project 2025 don't happen in a vacuum. There is an economic base to these developments. The US is losing ground on the world stage and will soon be superseded by China as the dominant economic power. Domestically, the average worker is worse off now than in living memory. We can't afford the skyrocketing cost of housing, food, healthcare, utilities, everything is going up, except wages. We have no mandated paid sick leave or parental leave. We have no benefits, no labor protections, no chance for advancement as more and more companies move to the gig model of employment. These are structural problems caused by the very nature of capitalism. Run the simulation 1,000 times and we'll end up right here every single time. The race for endlessly increasing profits results in monopoly, overaccumulation, a falling rate of profit, economic desperation among the masses, and a surge of reaction that carries fascism to the very top. You want a different result? Break the machine that powers these societal evils. If capitalism is allowed to survive, we will not. I mentioned at the beginning of the video that this episode was made possible by Henson Shaving. This is a new one for me, and I'm actually really glad they reached out, because I've been using safety razors for years. It's just a way better experience than those awful little cartridge razors or a big electric one you have to recharge all the time. Anyway, besides just making my preferred style of razor, Henson Shaving actually has a really cool story. Their background is in aerospace machining. They've built parts for the Mars rover and the ISS. So, as a space nerd and a safety razor snob, I was only too happy to try out this guy, the Henson AL-13. What sets this razor apart from pretty much anything else on the market is how precisely it's made. These things are made to crazy tight tolerances. The blade extends just enough and at a perfect 30 degrees to take all the guesswork out of the shaving angle. Plus, the blade is supported across its entire length, which makes for the smoothest shave I've ever experienced. Seriously, I've been using this thing for a couple months now and I haven't nicked myself once. One thing I've always hated about the shaving industry is how wasteful it is. Over 2 billion disposable razors end up in landfills every year. Henson Shaving had a problem with that too, so they built this thing to last a lifetime. It's all metal, their packaging is plastic-free, and it takes standard double-edged blades that are completely recyclable. The blades are super affordable too. A box of 100 will easily last you a year, and each blade is like 10 cents. And as a little bonus for supporting my channel, Henson will throw in a box of blades completely free when you purchase a razor. So if you'd like to help support my channel, reduce landfill waste, and get the best shave of your life from a product that will last a lifetime, go to hensonshaving.com/secondthought and enter the code SECONDTHOUGHT at checkout. Make sure you've got both the razor and the blades in your cart to get the blades completely free. Give the AL-13 a try today. It's a great product, and it really does help support my channel. If you enjoyed this video, consider dropping a like. If you hated it, a thumbs down. You can check out my other work by following the links on your screen. Thanks for watching, and I'll see you next time.